science. It's one of those topics that you either get or you don't. If you fall in the latter category, you might have wished at some point, maybe during a high school physics test, that you could just make up the answers and get credit for being clever. Well, our next guest makes his living doing exactly that. Phil Edwards is the author of Behind the Fake Science blog and a new sort of textbook called Fake Science 101. We wanted to know more about the not-so-scientific method of conjuring up facts, so we tracked him down. Tell us about it. Phil, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first off, I want to congratulate you. I understand that you have joined a pantheon of illustrious authors, J.D. Salinger, Lois Lowry, J.K. Rowling, because your book has now been banned by a school district in Texas. I guess the Houston School District was afraid that a fake science textbook would not reflect well on their curriculum.
Apparently that's the case. That's what I'm told, that a teacher requested to use it, I assume for some sort of in-class demonstration of just prompt conversation. And the report says that apparently it was banned from use both by teachers and by students. So I don't know much more than that. I know that if there is any book burning, anybody who burns a book should feel free to buy a second copy. But beyond that, I don't know much else.
Well, can you give us your blog, Fake Science, enormously popular. Can you give us an example of some of the fake science that you post there?
Sure. Well, I post everything from jokes about cats, which usually do very well because the internet loves cats, to something about coffee. So, for example, I can testify to this right now as I'm drinking a cup of coffee, but decaffeinated coffee and regular coffee are made in different ways. Normal coffee is made from the coffee bean, and decaffeinated coffee is made from the dirt. So they come from very different parts of the plant. And so it'll range from really stupid jokes to that to in-jokes about Feynman that maybe a few people will get, but hopefully they'll enjoy.
One of my favorites is your own Linnaean taxonomy, putting animals in the categories totally cute, sort of cute, and not cute. I think that's obviously,
yes.
Your understanding of biology is deep.
That has sparked a lot of debate, actually. I have a very long list of animals. This is in the textbook, and I have had some heated arguments with people over whether the chimpanzee is cute or not. I was saved when I was creating it because someone saw that I put the otter in the sort of cute taxonomy section, and they fortunately corrected me and let me know that otters are totally cute. So
they are, especially river otters.
Rectified.
Yeah, as we know here in New Hampshire,
cute.
River otters are the cutest. So do you know if there are a lot of real scientists who are fans of your blog or have told you that they've loved this book?
There definitely are, and that's one of the awesome things about it is that I get to interact with people who understand the sense of humor, but they're also able to add a new level of knowledge to it. One of the coolest things was I created a fake gossip magazine about the scientists in which it turned out that Marie Curie was involved in a love triangle and a few other scientists were implicated. And one of them was about Pluto, which was recently declassified as a planet. And one of the guys, Mike Brown, a scientist, who was involved in the declassification of Pluto as a planet, tweeted back at me and tweeted about the gossip magazine that I'd made up. So he has a great sense of humor, too. His Twitter name is Pluto Killer, so you know that he's a funny guy. But to have a real scientist like that who's been involved in significant work tweet back is really cool, and there are scores of others who've done the same. So it's been fun to see.
Do you find that you need to know, you know, the actual facts about these scientific fields before you can accurately misrepresent them?
Yeah, I do. When I was writing the book, I started with the astronomy chapter. There's all different scientific disciplines in it. And as soon as I got to that first page, I realized, oh, I'm going to have to actually research how to teach the reader about astronomy so that I can get it wrong. So I had to do that throughout. And in trickier subjects like physics, I really had to bone up on it because physics is crazy enough when it gets to the theoretical stuff that I had to make sure that I was able to get it fake correctly. So there was definitely a lot of that.
So, you know, a lot of people out there worry about, you know, science deniers and Have any of your fake science facts ever accidentally gotten into the hands of people who, you know, maybe use them to bolster an argument against real science?
Well, I think I have a range of people in the audience, those who are definitely very passionate about science, and then some who are skeptical about perhaps the authority that science has, which I think is reasonable, and even scientists are willing to be skeptical about their work unless it's proven and peer-reviewed and studied repeatedly. So I have some of that. And then, in a lighter example, I also have posts that just kind of spiral out of control because they go viral, and suddenly I'll get all caps lock comments about how that really isn't the way that cats' hearts work, or something like that. And that's when I know that something's become really popular because people are starting to misunderstand it or not take it as a joke.
Well, we do all have the image of the scientist in our mind, lab coat, clipboard, test tubes. What does a fake scientist wear to work every day?
Well, they definitely are going to have that lab coat. In the book, I encourage designer versions. So you want to spend at least $1,100 or $1,200 on a lab coat that'll really be form-fitting and make you look nice. As long as you have that, pants aren't necessarily required. You want to wear a lab coat under that lab coat, just in case your outer lab coat gets stained. So that's really important. And then I think lab goggles should be compulsory no matter where you are, just in case an experiment should appear somewhere around the corner. So we try to keep all our bases covered.
Well, that is solid advice. And Phil, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Phil Edwards, author of Fake Science 101 and the man behind the Fake Science blog. You can find out more about the book at wordofmouthradio.org, where I swear everything, except maybe my photoshopped photo, is completely true.